Hey everyone, what's going on? Welcome to a brand new review on the Sam Bassell podcast on the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And right now I'm going to be doing a review on Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which features the return voices of Shameik Moore as Miles Morales, Hailee Steinfeld as Gwen Stacy, Jake Johnson as Peter B. Parker, Brian Tyree Henry as Jefferson Davis, and new voices such as Issa Rae, Daniel Kaluuya, Jason Schwartzman, and Oscar Isaac. The film was directed by three newcomers to these films, such as Joaquin Dos Santos, Kemp Powers, and Justin K. Thompson.
My name is Miles Morales. I'm Brooklyn's one and only Spider-Man, and things are going great.
Oh yeah, you were supposed to be here at 5.
All right, whatever.
Whatever?
Wow.
Whatever?
So are you like a cow or a Dalmatian?
I am the Spot.
That's not funny.
Don't do that.
Miles' grades are pretty good. A in AP Physics.
That's my little man.
And a B in Spanish.
What?
Ooh, okay.
Miles.
Are you trying?
Mira, that's what I'm gonna say.
I gotta go. All right, bye.
He's lying to you. And I think you know it.
Now, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is the follow-up to the highly successful, a critically award-winning film Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which won the Best Animated Feature Oscar at the 2018 Academy Awards, which was during that award season run. And it kind of sparked this brand new interest within the overall Spider-Man franchise, not just kind of focusing on the character that we all know in Peter Parker, but introducing us to new spider people. That includes Miles Morales as Spider-Man, who I think after that film came out was a character that comic book people really know, and if you know the world of Spider-Man, love that character, but really introduced general audience members to this character and really kind of sparked a kind of co-player within the Spider-Man universe. And I think they brought new layers to characters like Gwen Stacy, to even characters like Peter Parker, and I think brought in new things to really love and enjoy about that film and about that world, and really kind of was a love letter to Spider-Man in a way. And I don't think we ever really saw that within any of the other live-action Spider-Man films, even though a lot of those really are really good films. There's just something new and different about that Spider-Man film that just brought something new and enjoyable that I think a lot of people really loved about it. And going into Across the Spider-Verse, and just kind of give a little synopsis about the film overall, it takes place about a year, around 18 months, a year and a half or so, since the events of Into the Spider-Verse. And this film shows Miles on an adventure with Gwen Stacy across the multiverse, where they meet a brand new team of spider people known as the Spider Society, which is led by Miguel O'Hara, who is also known as Spider-Man 2099, but comes into conflict with them over handling a new threat. So that's the basic premise of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And again, just kind of go a little bit back to the 2018 film to give my thoughts on what I thought about that film when I first originally saw it. I remember going to a press screening, one of the first press screenings for that film. It was around November, so it was well over a month before it was going to be released to the general audience public to consume that film when it came out in December of that year. But I remember really looking forward to it. I remember when Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse was first announced and the trailers looked enjoyable. I loved the new animation style, but I think like a lot of people before the film came out, was wondering, do we need this kind of film? Does Sony really need to be doing this? They were in kind of the beginning formulations of this kind of new spin-off world that they were doing with the Venom character, and they were still partnering up with the MCU on making the Tom Holland Spider-Man films, and that was kind of the main success for Spider-Man up until that point, even though Venom was also a surprise hit back in 2018. The big question was, do we still need these other films within Spider-Man, or do we just really need those Tom Holland live-action films that are doing really well, that are integrated into the successful universe of the MCU? And this film kind of proved all that wrong. And again, I'm somebody who loved Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and I was absolutely shocked when watching that film when it came out. And I remember turning to someone who I didn't even know, who was another critic. We just turned to each other And just we realized that watching Into the Spider-Verse that there was something big was going to happen with this film. And while it didn't do huge numbers in terms of the box office, it made only around $350 million worldwide. It was still enough to warrant not just one sequel, but two sequels to continue the story of Miles Morales. And this was a film, Into the Spider-Verse, that gained a lot more popularity over the years since 2018. And I'm really happy about that. It was one of my favorite comic book films, really my favorite comic book film of 2018. It was my second favorite film overall in 2018. It was one of my favorite comic book movies of all time, one of my favorite Spidey films of all time. The animation was just top notch. It was a mixture of 2D animation with 3D mixed in with kind of a lived in comic book that we were seeing on the big screen. And we always kind of say the cliche word when watching a comic book film, especially in live action, oh, this looks like it was a comic book film drawn to life, or this one looked like that. But when you watch the animation of Into the Spider-Verse, it really truly feels like it's a comic book actually brought to the biggest screen possible. And you have all the little thwips and thwaps and all that stuff that was showcased in the film that made it feel like you were turning the pages of one of those Spider-Man comic books. So all the animation was incredible. Also a big part of the success, I think, of that first film was the popularity of the score and also the soundtrack. Of course, you had the Sway Post Malone song of Sunflower. You had Danger. You had Not Scared of the Dark. You had all these amazing songs within this one soundtrack that really brought a new angle to this film and delivered on it that I think was very surprising. And also the big kind of core thing about the film, really in any film, is that it delivered on delivering a great story, a great message of anybody can wear the mask. You don't just have to be one specific person. You can be anybody and still carry on the mantra of Spider-Man, man, woman, doesn't matter who you are. You can carry that whoever you are. And it also did a great job of balancing the humor and the emotion. And so I think all these things worked really well for Into the Spider-Verse. So when you get the announcement that you're making two additional sequels to this huge success of a film that came out that audience members really adored and love, it's always the big question of how can a sequel follow that up? How are they able to elevate the works of what you did in the original film? And sometimes sequels are able to live up to those expectations, sometimes they fall flat on their face, and sometimes, although it's very rare, but it does happen, where sequels rise above the originals. And so it was always going to be a question of where does Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse come into play? And again, you had three new directors come on board replacing the original three from Into the Spider-Verse, but you still had the core emotional, I think, anchor of this team behind the scenes, which of course are Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who came back to both produce and write not just Across the Spider-Verse, but for next year's kind of trilogy capper in the story of Miles Morales in Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse. So I always knew if you had those two guys still intact, whatever you were going to do with this film, it would still have that kind of core that you needed to keep that consistency going. So all this was kind of going for me when I finally saw the film this past weekend. And I got to say, while I still have to see it a few more times to think if it is my favorite Spider-Man film, or if I think this is better than the original film overall, I do think this is a worthy follow-up to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, as Across the Spider-Verse just, I think, does things that are better than the first film, but I think it faults a little bit on some other elements. But they're just few nitpicks. I wouldn't even call them really negatives that really kind of stood out to me with Across the Spider-Verse. But overall, it is just a amazing, incredible, worthy sequel to the previous film, and kind of builds upon everything that you would expect a sequel to kind of do. So I really, really enjoyed this film and had an absolute blast with it. So I do think, again, that I would take this film over it. But again, I still want to see it a couple more times to really kind of gauge what I think overall about it. But a few areas that the film definitely does, I think, improve on from the original film in so many ways. The first one, of course, I was just talking about it with the animation of Into the Spider-Verse. The animation for Across the Spider-Verse is just, it's purely revolutionary in what they have been able to do with this film. And it gets me excited for Beyond the Spider-Verse next year. But just looking at this film, it just did things that just showcased the confidence in the creators. And everything that they were able to do just one-ups everything you would expect animation to kind of come with. And there's so many different styles and variation of animation to kind of make each and every single one of the universes that we go into new, unique, distinct in so many different ways. And you can see that, again, the confidence level in the creators that, not to give anything away, but we start out in a whole new universe and a new animation style than what we did in the original film before kind of going back to that in Miles Morales' world. And it just shows that from the creators, from Lord and Miller to Ken Powers and the rest of the directors, that we feel confident in our animators who work tirelessly on this film. This is what we're kind of giving you. And it's just absolutely amazing to see all the different unique ways that you can identify different worlds and characters. And it all just kind of blends in seamlessly into this one amazing visual narrative that they're really trying to showcase to you in this film. And another thing about the animation that really kind of stood out to me a lot was the fact that in a lot of the emotional moments within the story is the ability of this film to really kind of get up close to certain characters and just be able to focus on their facial features. And when it came to some really good kind of plot points that was really kind of driving home an emotional punch and really kind of deliver these tender, sweet moments, they focus in on the facial structures of these characters, and you feel like you're watching them really kind of come to life in live action somewhere. You're able to kind of see what each character is really kind of thinking, not through words, but their expressions, with their eyes, with their eyebrows, with the way that they look at certain characters, and they really, really do a good job of just kind of implementing those things that are small but are effective in different ways that really, really do work for this film. And another thing that a great sequel is supposed to do is build up on the scope and the scale, and exactly is what this film does within the Spider-Verse. It kind of explores the mythology and expands on it, introducing you to all these new variations of spider people overall. And I think some of the really new, cool characters that we got to be introduced to, I think Jessica Drew, a Spider-Woman who is voiced by Issa Rae, was a great addition. I thought Miguel O'Hara, voiced by Oscar Isaac, was another one as well, where they really kind of give different elements, different sides of the kind of conflict that is going on within this whole world, really. And I think them paired up and going alongside Miles and Gwen and Peter B. Parker was just a really interesting dynamic to really kind of see play out. And I think another thing that really could have gotten away from them, and when you see the trailers, you think, well, is this going to be a very Easter egg filled movie? Is it just going to be Easter eggs upon Easter eggs upon Easter eggs? And they really make sure that they pick and choose certain spots that work in those different areas without losing sight of the key story that they are still trying to tell. And I think some of the cameos that you'll see in this film, again, not to give anything away, work really well. There's some really cool surprises, and I think they'll get some laughs. I think they'll get some people really invested into the story, and I think they worked really, really well in the spots that they were placed in. They didn't feel rushed. They didn't feel out of place. It fell naturally within the overall story that they were trying to tell. And I think when you look at something like this or Into the Spider-Verse, or even something like Spider-Man No Way Home with Tom Holland, where that is very much an Easter egg cameo-filled film, it very much so delivers on the main narrative. And Across the Spider-Verse does that as well. I think the only thing that kind of harbors the story overall is the fact that it is part one out of part two. They're very much at the very end of it, feel has a cliffhanger ending that leaves more to be told in the final film or the next film in this chapter with Beyond the Spider-Verse. But I do think still they're able to deliver a great journey, not just for Miles, but I think this is also a great story in a film for Gwen a little bit. And I think they're both kind of co-leads in this film. you work with one and then you end on another, and they both kind of mix in very, very well with each other, and they're both going on different journeys in this film, but you make sure that you focus on each of them, and everyone else is really kind of supporting characters. But I think they do a great job of really kind of showcasing a story arc for both of these characters, but also making sure there's room for more with the next film that is coming out. So those to me are just some of the great things about this film that really just kind of stuck out to me that I absolutely loved. Some of the minor nitpicks that I have, and I call them nitpicks because to me they're not really negatives about the film. I didn't think that they just destroyed any positivity that I had with it, but there's some things that I might have would have fixed a little bit, or just things that I think worked better in the first film that didn't work in this one overall. So to me, this one is the longest American animated film of all time. It runs at around 2 hours and 20 minutes, and I definitely felt the length, especially towards the third act of the film. I definitely felt like there were moments where I thought, oh, this is the ending. Oh no, this is where we're going to be ending off at. It just kept going for a few extra minutes, so I felt like it could have been a little bit tighter towards the third act of the film, but still, I think it did some great stuff in the film overall that helped push the narrative forward. There's going to be a little bit tighter, more compact than it was at 2:20, but still, I think if you cut down on the runtime just a little bit, it's still an enjoyable film. But even at 2:20, I still think you can enjoy it for what they're trying to tell you overall. And for some people that I know, they loved and enjoyed every single minute of it. They didn't want anything taken away, and I appreciate that. But to me, compact it a little bit, tighten it up a little bit. I think it could have come in 10 minutes shorter than really where it was at 2:20. Could have maybe come in at around 2:10 instead. And then something else that, again, is more of a nitpick and something that is a personal preference for me, is that I do think, again, something that I talked about that was great and iconic with the first film was the soundtrack for the film and how it's integrated into the first movie. Again, some of the songs are just iconic that you're able to place in those scenes, and you think of the song right away and it just sticks in your head. To me, with Across the Spider-Verse, I didn't really feel that way with the soundtrack. They definitely played it in various parts and I enjoyed it, but it didn't really stick out to me. I remember in the first press screening before, again, the film came out, before the soundtrack came out, it was the scene where Miles is really kind of taking his first leap as Spider-Man in his all black, kind of with the red painted Spider-Man outfit, and he's leaping off the building, he's taking his first webbing and the leap of faith, all that. I remember that song stuck in my head and wanted to know what it was. It just wasn't out there for me to know what the song was yet, and I didn't really feel that way with this film, that it was really any kind of eye-popping song within the soundtrack that really stood out to me that I wanted to go out right away and just listen to as soon as I was out of the theater. I did listen to the soundtrack and it's good, but it didn't stick out to me as the film was going on. And to me, that is a good way to utilize a soundtrack. I just felt like there was nothing that popped really in that overall. But still, to me, it's just a little small grip that I had. It didn't take away from the effect of the film because, again, this is just purely an amazing film overall that I think a lot of people are going to enjoy. I think people who are Spider-Man fans are going to enjoy this film. I think people who are just fans of this character of Miles are going to enjoy the film. I think this does a great job of carrying and continuing his journey onward from the first film. Same thing with Gwen Stacy and all these other characters that were introduced to. It gets me excited about where they're going to be going in the next film, which is coming out in March of next year, 2024. So to me, this was just a great continuation, an amazing sequel, a worthy follow-up to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. It's just, again, I don't know if I would put this one above that film, and I think a lot of it just has to do with the runtime was a little bit too much, and I think the story more so is definitely is a first half, even though they did, I think, a really good job of focusing on certain arcs that you can just find within this one film. Film, and then they can begin kind of another sub arc in the next film while still telling this overarching story between these two films and Across and Beyond. But still, overall, it's, I think, going to go down as one of my favorites of the year overall. It's definitely going to be one of my favorite films for this year's summer movie season. I absolutely loved it. I enjoyed it. I cannot wait to go see it again. I highly recommend this film, which is why, overall, my letter grade for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is an A. So what did you guys think about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse? Have you seen it yet? Let me know what you thought about it down below. And with that down and out of the way, that will do it for this review on the Sam Bissell Podcast. Once again, thank thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out my channel for more content. You can check me out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, SoundCloud, and much more. Also, make sure to tune in onto the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions, and be sure to check out the other amazing shows that are on here, such as You Mad Bro, the number one source to see what the internet is pissed off about on a weekly basis. Also, make sure to check out Goal-Driven Professionals, geared toward improving client relations, return on investment, and customer acquisition costs for independent businesses and services. Also, make sure to check out The Daily Grind, a weekly motivational podcast with Kelly Johnson, give you everyday tips and key takeaways on reaching your goals. Also, along the way, make sure check out these other amazing shows on the Podcast Solutions, such as Wrestle Attic Radio, Fretzelmania Podcast, and Midnight Showing. You can check these out and so much more on the website, ambiguouspodcastsolutions.com, also on Facebook and Twitter at RealAmbiguous. And if you want to check out Canterbury Treehouse, use the coupon code AMBIGUOUS. Also, when you get a chance, make sure to follow me on social media. You can find me on Twitter at BasselSamuel, that's BUSSELLSAMUEL, and also on Facebook at SamBassell. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning into this review, and until next time, keep on screening.
Can't stop me now.
You can't run forever, kid.
I can't lose one more friend.
Miguel, this isn't what we talked about.
You knew?
I had no idea what you're doing.
Everyone keeps telling me how my story is supposed to go. Nah, I'm gonna do my own thing.
Stop Spider-Man!
You know what? Me?
And then I looked at my uncle and...
Let me guess. He died?